Hi, everyone. Thanks for coming back to Burnout Bites. Today, we are talking with Alicia Murria, and we are going to have an insightful discussion regarding all the different things she's had in the career and how she tries to elevate the profession. Thank you so much for being here, Alicia.
Thank you so much for having me, Kari. It's definitely an honor and a pleasure.
So can you tell us a little bit about your career as a dental hygienist, how you started a little bit, all that you do now, and what you're passionate about?
Sure. I got my start as a dental hygienist with no previous dental experience. I've been practicing as a hygienist since 2012. Very early in my career, I had a car accident and I had a whiplash injury, and I started to realize that my journey in dental hygiene might be short-lived. I initially thought that I would go to dental school, but I started thinking, now that I have a shoulder injury, this might not be a viable option for me. So I started to get involved with the hygiene associations and figure out what other options there were in dental hygiene to advance my career. So I started with advocacy, and in my advocacy with the American Dental Hygiene Association, I learned there were some options to advance your career. And I took the opportunity to advance my associate's degree to a master's degree completely online. And I learned about that through my association with the ADHA. So with my education, with my master's degree, I really just set out to focus on clinical practice guidelines, because as I was working as a clinician, I was doing some temp work, and I started to realize that every single practice did something a little bit different, although I'm still a dental hygienist wherever I go. But every single last hygiene department runs themselves a completely different way from the next. So I started to get really curious. If we all know what we're supposed to do at work, why is it that I go to one dental hygiene department and there's no perio chart, and then you go to another dental hygiene department and there might be a PSR, and then you go to another and there's a comprehensive perio chart? So I got super curious. And in my career, I've done some writing, some public speaking. I've been a KOL with several dental companies, but I'm really just focused on helping dental hygienists fully practice in their scope and utilize the highest levels of care, especially integrating technology to educate their patients. So that's a little bit about me. Super passionate about just doing the right thing.
So that last part that you mentioned as a part of empowering the dental hygienist to do the right thing, I think that's one of the reasons some hygienists suffer from burnout as a contributory factor. And that, like you said, you go to one practice, you can work at several different practices, either temping, or sometimes people don't have a permanent position. They work at a couple offices this day a week and another office at this day, and everything's different. And like you said, we all are seeing the mouth is the same, but those protocols can be different. And so a lot of people find it frustrating to try to do what's right or to know what's right. And a lot of Facebook groups, people are asking other hygienists for maybe articles to back up that there should be a regular periodontal chart or regular x-rays, or, you know, basically the backup, the need for standard of care. Mm-hmm. So is that what you're saying, that mainly what you interested to in the research?
Yes, that's exactly what it was. Because as a temporary dental hygienist, I know that there is a standard of care. This is what I do every day. This is what I signed on. I took a dental hygiene oath to do. But when I go to some practices, I feel like I'm being challenged, or I'm told that what I'm doing is overzealous, or it's not within my scope of practice. And I know full well what I'm doing is within the scope of dental hygiene practice. It was a challenge for me. So I wanted to find out why am I this unicorn, and I'm only doing the bare minimum, but mm-hmm. It seems that I'm a unicorn and it's frowned upon in some practices, and some practices love me because I'm doing above and beyond. But again, I'm doing the bare minimum, you know?
Yeah, I've had that experience myself, and I found that frustrating, that in some practices, they want you to do the most, and you're helping collaborate with the dentist, and you're seeing the results and the benefits of your patients' healthcare getting better and them signing on to do necessary treatment. And you may be rewarded by, in many ways, maybe that you're just happy that your patient is doing better. Maybe there is an incentive. However, in some offices, like, they barely want you to talk to your patient. Like, they just want you to sit there and clean, for lack of better word, actually. They don't want you to actually be a healthcare provider. They fight you if you try to take blood pressure or different vitals, or, you know, do the oral cancer screening or everything. It feels like a fight. And I know that that can be frustrating. I've had that at some times where the dentist values, I can feel that they value my dental hygiene diagnosis and experience and expertise and the way I'm able to get patients to do the necessary treatment by putting value in there. And then other dentists feel like I'm trying to act like I'm the dentist. So that definitely is frustrating for a lot of hygienists and contributes to the burnout or them maybe wanting to leave the field.
I agree. I attempted an office in Washington, D.C. once, and this dentist did not want me in the room while he did the exam. And it was so hard for me to wrap my mind around it, Kari. Like, what do you mean you don't want me in the room? I was just in this room with them for 40 whole minutes. You don't want to know anything that I saw, any of the assessments that I took. Like, so when he didn't want me in the room, I would just stop him in the hallway and run down my dental hygiene diagnosis. And I'll still stand on the hallway while you do your exam on the inside. But it was like so hard for me to wrap my mind around. Do you realize that I'm here to support you? Do you realize that I'm here to collect all of the necessary data to outline the patient's oral health status? And should I not be able to eloquently explain that to you in front of the patient so you can put your stamp of approval on what my dental hygiene diagnosis was?
That's crazy to me because in my
he was an old school dentist. He still had paper charts, you know, so maybe it was just an antiquated way that he learned to work with dental hygienists. I haven't seen that. I won't say I see that a lot, but that was my one experience that time. But it just had me like scratching my head like, wait, you don't value my opinion?
I have never, if anything, dentists in my experience get mad when I'm like, I leave the room. I'm like, you're making me late. I'm sorry. I'm going to start up in another.
I'm moving on.
You know, like, no, you missed your window. So here's the
not enough to
help everything figured out, you know? And so basically the dentists that I work with, they learn that if they have that, I tell them after I've taken the x-rays, I'm going to need an exam. You have between now and a certain period of time and to come in the room and we discuss what I see potentially with the patients and we try to show the patient we're a united front, basically, you know. But if you take too long, I'm going to another room or the patient's in another room. Something's happening. So that's like you said, maybe it's just an antiquated way, but I have never seen that. That's really different.
Yeah. And just even speaking to doing the right thing, you know, I think having that standard of care is something that's super important and it can help to prevent burnout. If you have a relationship with your dentist, you can go to them with a standard of care document and basically say, during a hygiene appointment, these are the things that should be done. These are the things that I'm looking for, and this is going to help me to arrive at the patient's oral health status, right, or their diagnosis. And that would be something along the lines of once a year or once every 2 years, we update a medical history. Once a year, we update a comprehensive perio chart. Once a year, we update vertical bite wings. You know, once a year, we update a digital scan. So that way, everyone is on the same page with what you know is the right thing to do for your patient that's going to help you to educate your patient on where they are and what they need to have optimum oral health. Without a standard of care in place and the dentist knowing that these are the philosophies and ideas of the dental hygienist, it sometimes get lost in the shuffle. So when I'm a temp dental hygienist and I'm going in and I see a scanner, I'm like, holy moly, there's a scanner. I'm getting my hands on that because every office doesn't have one and I want to get my hands on a scanner as often as I can. They're looking at me like I'm crazy. They're like, wait, hygienists don't scan in this office. Why is this hygienist just picking up the scanner and why is she scanning? If there was a standard of care in place, everyone would know why Alicia's picking up the scanner, what she's using it for, how often she's going to use it today, because we've already done a huddle, a chart audit, and we know who needs to have a digital scan and x-rays and perio charts. And we all have a workflow that we can follow that's going to help the patient get the best service from the dental hygiene department today.
All right. So Alicia, let's go there because I know scanning is what you do. You
teach it.
You have courses. You love the scanner. But let's be real. There are hygienists in my Facebook group who do not want to scan. They feel like they don't have enough time already. And now the doctor went to some course and they want them to scan every single patient and they're already running behind and can't pee and have a snack and no one's helping them. So what are ways that we can make sure we're doing the standard of care and helping these patients? Because when they see it, you know, when they see it, not just a little tiny mirror, they're actually seeing 3D what is going on in their mouth, then that can help promote better health and overall health and wellness. But how can we make sure that the hygienist is supported so that they're doing the standard of care and not feeling like this is one more thing or this is just for production?
Sure. And to the hygienist who's listening, if you have a high rate of no-shows or cancellations, I do feel like adding this into your appointment is going to serve you and your patients because it's going to add value for the work that you do as a professional. So don't look at it as something that's going to hinder your role. It's going to help you and it's going to promote you as a scientist and give your patient a reason to want to come back because you're one of the few hygienists that is scanning. So that's one thing. The second thing I would say is if your doctor has gone to a course and they come back and they say, we need to be scanning every patient, the doctor truly understands the value of integrating this technology. There was something that was said or done at this course that made the doctor come back and say, we've got to start using this. I couldn't agree more. We should scan every patient, but can we scan every patient every day? No, we can't. So what I would say to the hygienist who feels that they don't have the time to do one more thing, and you have this challenge to scan patients on your schedule, I would encourage you to start slow and have a true conversation with your dentist on what this looks like and how starting slow looks for you. So for me, what starting slow looks like is maybe scan one patient a day. This could be your one new patient. This could be a patient who's not due for radiographs. This could be a perio maintenance patient who's not due for an exam. If your patient is also not due for a perio chart, you could scan those patients. I would also let the admin team know or whoever's doing your confirmations. If there is an opening in your schedule for some reason or there's a patient that's running behind, to let you know. So that way you can spend a bit more time with your patient instead of rushing through the appointment, dismissing them. And now you've got a whole 60 minutes where you could have really been truly engaging your patient because you had a last minute cancellation. So I would say that number one is start slow. Number two, communicate with your front office team. The more you scan, the faster you become and the easier it is to integrate it into your workflow. In all honesty, I never started scanning in a dental practice. As a KOL for Align Technology, I had the privilege of attending a training seminar in Raleigh at the Invisalign headquarters, and we learned to scan standing up in a conference room. So I never had the luxury of learning how to scan in an operatory with a reclined chair where a patient could be comfortable and turn their head and even have a saliva ejector. Like I didn't have those amenities. So if I could learn to scan in a conference room standing up and with a suit on, I'm sure you can get down and dirty in your scrubs and figure it out in your operatory. The first scan that I ever did standing up in a conference room took me about 27 minutes. And again, I told you all, I don't have a home office. I temp and I get my hands on a scanner every chance I get. I can scan now in a matter of 5 to 7 minutes. I felt like my best scan that I've ever completed was like 3 minutes, 21 seconds. And that's only because I continue to try to beat my best time. I continue to try to put my hands on a scanner every single time I scan. And then the other thing I would tell you all is just go into it with confidence. A lot of our patients have never had a scan. So their very first time having this experience and this encounter is going to be with you. They're going to be wowed. So just go into it knowing they don't know what you're doing. You're not going to break the scanner. You're not going to hurt the patient. And they have never had a reference this type of exam before. So they don't know what to expect. You can't mess it up. So just go into it with confidence. Start slow and communicate with the admin team.
So when I first learned how to use the scanner, I was working at a DSO. They had a huge conference in Orlando to teach everyone how to use it, basically in the state. It wasn't a conference room. I can't honestly recall if they had any chairs in there or not, or if we were reclining, but that's how we learned. And then when we got back to work, I think we practiced on each other. And then basically they wanted a lot of scans done. So every new patient needed a scan. And then, you know, we tried to do recare patients, but it was easier to do new patients at that time. You know, since we had so many new patients. And what I saw was patients committed to treatment right away. They committed to SRP, crowns, fillings, everything, because they saw it. They saw 3D in their mouth and they were excited. They thought it was cool and everything. And like you said, the more you use it, the quicker you do get with it. And then I do believe that we need the support. So, you know, if the hygienist can't do it or they're running behind and it needs to be done on the next patient, maybe someone else on the team pull that patient into another room and help do it as well. But, you know, that technology is there. We want to make sure, like you said, we are doing the right things for our patients.
I couldn't agree more. I think once, once we realize that our role as healthcare providers is to be proactive for our patients, we will really gravitate towards tools and equipment that helps us to further explain our role. Digital scanners, intraoral photography, AI radiographic interpretation, voice automated perio charting, voice dictation for chart notes. These are all things that aid us in communicating with our patient, but also having a system that we can document what we've done or share with our patient. So we have continuity of care, but also outlining how we've given them the most quality experience. All of these things, anything that you can integrate technology into, it's also mimicking that same information back to your patient. So if you think about voice automated perio charting, before you're calling out these measurements to a counterpart, maybe, or maybe you're charting by yourself, you're just calling out numbers, right? You don't have anyone saying four, warning, or you say four and pus, and it kind of screams it back at the patient. These are things that helps the patient be engaged in their oral health journey. So adding technology into something as simple as perio charting is also going to add value to the hygiene appointment and help to reduce your last minute cancellations and no-shows.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. And I think sometimes when we are learning something new, it could be very scary. I mean, think about when digital x-rays first came out. Yeah, they're cool, but it took a little longer to get used to how to do it. And, you know, it's not flexible like the film. You have to learn how to adapt it and the holders. So, you know, everything does take learning a new skill set. And so it does take time. At a lot of the conferences, they will have courses that can help us learn how to do the technology or how to go faster. So I do definitely encourage listeners to sign up for these different courses so that they can get better. And also increasing our skill set increases our opportunities. This is the future. So regardless if we may want to do it or not, we don't want to be left behind. If we want to continue this profession and we want to make sure we're doing the right thing for our patients, we're going to have to find ways to get better ourselves to be able to help our patients.
I agree. And something you just said about, you know, getting faster. I remember in hygiene school, I learned to take radiographs with film. We didn't have a digital system. And this was in 2010. Right. So this is not that long ago. But I remember my very first time taking an FMX. It felt like it took a whole appointment. You know, your hygiene appointments are 4 hours in hygiene school. And I felt like the FMX took that much time to just, you know, expose, develop and put on a mount. Like it just took that much time. Fast forward to today. How long does it take you to take an FMX?
Not long. Like,
Five minutes, seven minutes.
Honestly, like, as long as they don't have like some craziness or gagging or anything, I'm in and out.
You're in and out. And the same is true with anything. Like you said, anything that you're learning, the very first time you do it, you're sweating. You're trying to be so perfect and get everything absolutely right. And you're just thinking about it that much. But the more you do it, it becomes like second nature. And you're doing it in your sleep, like Neo in the Matrix. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So what I wanted to say, you talked about earlier about the challenges as far as at the beginning of your career. Was there anything else that you dealt with as far as in the career with burnout or diversity or anything like that, that you would like to talk to our listeners about overcoming any challenges?
Sure. Yeah. I was in my fifth year of my career and I had landed what seemed to be my dream job. So this was an office where I worked Monday through Thursday, 8 to 5, Friday, 8 to 1, no Saturdays, got paid holidays, paid vacation, 3 weeks paid vacation out the gate. You didn't have to wait a year to get your 3 weeks paid vacation. This office matched 401k by like 5%, which was unheard of in dentistry. They also give you your birthday as a holiday. So if your birthday falls during the week, you get a paid day off for your birthday, or you can just roll it onto another day if you want. But it seemed to be a really nice office, you know, 60-minute hygiene appointments, updated technology, the whole nine yards. Oh, I'm into this job maybe 6 months at this point. And there was a, you can't see me, but I'm doing air quotes. There was a hygienist who was assigned to only see children under the age of 14. So anyone who had a child prophy was being seen in this column. Well, because of some cancellations and the schedule got shuffled around, one of these children under the age of 14 was now placed on my schedule. And they had been seen for a few recares with this hygienist, air quote hygienist, for the duration of their childhood dentition. So now they're seeing me for the first time. When I see this kid, number 2425 facial, was rolled and inflamed, and there was black line calculus there. And this is like a 12 or 13 year old. And I was just blown away, but I know what to do as a clinician. I'm going to put some topical there and I'm going to scale it. And it's going to bleed, I know, but I got to get this calculus out of here if these teeth have any chance. So I did what I had to do. The kid was a little uncomfortable. The mom was concerned because this had never happened before. And the mom wanted to know, why are you now making my child bleed when they have never bled before? And the other hygienist, air quote hygienist, had never really used these tools on her kid before. So I had a conversation, and I didn't know 6 months in that this air quote hygienist was a dental assistant. So this dental assistant was seeing columns of patients. Apparently, the rule that they made up was that she could see kids under the age of 14 as long as she didn't use a scaler. But she also didn't have the wherewithal to say that some of these kids need to be scaled. So I had a hard time with that. When I found out that she was an assistant, she came to me and she asked me, could I show her how to use one of the scalers just in case she had to go in and do it? I immediately declined. I asked her, how did she get this position? I asked her, where did she go to school? And that's when I realized this girl is a dental assistant. So I went to the dental management team, and I told them my discovery as if they didn't know, you know, that this is new to me. So I brought it up. And now what's happening is this column of patients that are being seen by this air quote hygienist now have to be seen by someone else because she has 5 days a week of a blocked schedule. She's got 10 patients a day that she's seeing, you know? So now these patients have to be seen somewhere else. So now me and two other hygienists are taking on the workload of this air quote hygienist, and everyone's mad at me. So my dream job that I was supposed to ride out into the sunset with, I now have an ethical dilemma. You know, I spoke up about the right thing being that a dental assistant should not be scaling and they should not have their own column of patients. And the repercussion was the team started to turn their back on me. And, you know, it could be really catty at first where people are ordering out for lunch and, oh, we forgot to ask if you wanted something. And then everyone's helping people get ready for the end of the day to close out and you're the last one and no one's helping you. And it started to be like small things like that. And I had to ask myself, if I had to do this again, would I do anything different? And if nothing changes in this situation, would I be okay with staying here now? And I had to make those difficult answers. I had to figure it out for myself. And ultimately I left. Mm-hmm. And I haven't had a full-time job since. I've been temping. Mm-hmm. So that was a challenge for me in just realizing that the right thing to do is the right thing to do. Do you speak up when you see something that is not right? And yes, when you speak up for things that is seemingly the culture, you do run the risk of having a target on your back because you're now changing the culture that everyone is used and accustomed to. But you have to be okay with knowing that the right thing to do is the right thing to do. Because patients, if they continue to see this air quote hygienist, they could have juvenile perio. And I don't think I could sleep with that.
And as you talk about that, that's what's changing in the field right now, because supposedly because of the shortage of dental hygiene professionals, we see that in a number of states, they are trying to introduce legislature where they're scaling assistance. And I know that recently I took my son for his first appointment a couple months ago at a pediatric office, and I asked who's going to be doing the treatment for him, the prophylaxis, and it ended up being an assistant. I was right there. I was watching her and everything. But, and I, you know, I'm not in an office right now either. I temp. And I was just like, okay, can you go back over here with the polisher? Can you do this? And I wasn't happy with the whole appointment whatsoever, but still, I'm glad that you spoke up. And I know that it's difficult at times to speak up. There's been times that I wish I've spoke up throughout my career. And I think the reason we don't at times is fear. We're afraid. In the dental community, we are warned from our hygiene school that the dental community is small. Don't gossip. Don't do anything. People will blacklist you. And I have seen it where some have been blacklisted, or you see in some forums, you know, you go to get another job somewhere, but the dentist is friends with his other dentist. And so once they find that out, then they won't hire you. So I think that's a concern to many, but we, like you said, we have to do what is right. One of my first office as a dental hygienist, I left. And one of the straws that caused me to leave was I saw they had paper charts at that time. I saw the assistant fishing in the chart with the x-rays for the x-rays, pop out an x-ray. And I'm like, what are you doing? And so basically they, according to what I believe, she had been instructed to find an x-ray that looked like the treatment that they did for a patient who had a crown that there no longer was an x-ray for some reason, either the insurance they sent in the original, there was a duplicate that got lost. So I was like, oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. And so I said that it was wrong and everything, but I didn't report that. That's insurance fraud. There's a lot of different frauds and everything. I just left. I was like, I don't want to be involved with this. And there a lot of times, I think as long as it's not too bad, we may just leave. I've known of hygienists who have reported offices for extreme OSHA issues and things. But I think the point is that we do need to make sure that we're speaking up, that we're advocating for ourselves, our patients, our professions, despite having that uncomfortable conversations. And, you know, we at least if we speak up, we've done what we've had to do. If we do have to take it further, if it's a safety issue for our patients or fraud, and, you know, ethically, we feel we need to do more because we did take this oath, then that's something that we have to deal with and then find another environment for ourselves.
That, yeah, I couldn't echo that more. I don't like talking about problems without having some logical solution. I'm just a solution-oriented person, and this can seemingly be a problem, and this could potentially lead to burnout if you feel like you're challenged in doing the right thing. So if I can, Kari, leave a resource for the listeners, I would love to do that. And it could help you all to understand what is within the scope of practice for dental hygienists, what's expected from us during each dental hygiene appointment, and how you really walk through a dental hygiene appointment with the optimal standard of care that's outlined by the ADHA. So I'll share that link with you, Kari, and just make sure that our listeners can their eyes on it. But this is something that was developed by the American Dental Hygienists Association in 2016. They typically update this supplemental version of the Access magazine periodically, but they only really update it when there has been some groundbreaking evidence-based information that's going to change the way we practice as a dental hygienist. So since 2016, there hasn't been anything truly earth-shattering that would cause them to update this supplement. But I think as more dental hygienists start to read this supplement and they kind of closely mirror this to what they do in their practice, they can then start to advocate for what they think should be added to this supplemental version of the clinical standards for care, because I don't believe there's anything in there that outlines digital scanning or intraoral photography. So that could be something that could be updated on the next version. But in saying that the right thing to do is the right thing to do, I'd be remiss if I didn't say that the right thing to do is to support your dental hygiene counterparts. Mm-hmm. We should not go against one another. And let's just say, Kari, I have the privilege and honor to move to sunny Florida, and I'm working with you in a dental practice somewhere, and I realize, hi, wow, God, you know, Kari, she uses a Columbia probe, and I like, you know, a UNC probe. It doesn't make Kari a bad dental hygienist. We just come from two different educational backgrounds. Mm-hmm. So what happens in this situation is Kari and I have to sit down and outline what's going to be the best for our patients and agree on how we're going to move forward and practice as professionals. What gets really catty and bad is when you get the hygienist that comes from Michigan to Florida, and then the hygienist from Michigan implements something that she learned in Michigan. The Florida hygienist says, this girl is crazy. We don't do that here. Mm-hmm. We don't have any time for that. Our patients would never go for that. You know, just support one another and be open-minded and having an optimal experience for your patients.
Yeah, I think that's really great.
A burnout. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. We're going to have the link for that in the show notes so that you can take a look at that, because there's always a lot of questions regarding what should we do. Of course, like she said, there's probably going to be some updates because things are changing. Technology is changing, so things are constantly going to need to be updated. But knowing exactly what the solution is important, because we can talk about all these negative things at times, but we have to find solutions that are going to work for us. So, you know, we all have unfortunately experienced issues and challenges in our lives and our careers that can contribute to burnout, but we have to find a solution to what is causing that burnout. So if it's frustration, because as Alicia and I have mentioned, you know, sometimes in offices, there can be different protocols and people not knowing what to do. Or perhaps maybe you find out something that is going wrong at the office and there's an ethical dilemma. We have to find ways to communicate properly with one another and come to a solution. So thank you so much, Alicia, for being here today and for giving us that link, that valuable link that's going to help sort us out. And thank you for all that you do for dentistry.
I enjoyed chatting with you. Appreciate you for having me on. Look forward to doing it again.
Where can we find you?
You can find me on LinkedIn, Alicia Maria RDH. You can also find me on Instagram, Alicia Maria RDH.
All right. Thank you so much once again for being here.
Thank you.